1500 UTC.
Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Monday, September 25th, 2023. Sudanese Americans want U.S. President Joe Biden to take action and end the violence in Sudan.
5 million, please act.
And South Sudanese authorities accuse Uganda of land grabbing.
On 22nd, we are supposed to make a declaration in that meeting, issue of land. Who owns this land? Is it the Ugandan or a South Sudanese?
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Several human rights organizations and Sudanese citizens held a rally in front of the White House, urging the Biden administration to address the Sudan conflict, protect civilians, and increase humanitarian help. This rally comes as the conflict between the Sudan Armed Forces and the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces extends to its sixth month. Nabil Biagio attended the weekend rally and reports from Washington.
5 million, please act.
Dozens of Sudanese living in the United States braved heavy rain to gather in front of the White House, urging support for millions of people affected by the conflict back home. Fatima Ramram, a Sudanese-American at Saturday's rally, said her family had been displaced from the Sudanese capital, Khartoum. Some relocated to the northern part of the country, while others became refugees in Egypt.
I'm here just to... We need attention from President Biden. We need help for Sudan people. They're suffering. They need shelter. They need food. They need safety. They need to be, like, you know, in a safe place for children, too. Myself, I guess, a witness for people in Egypt. I saw people, a woman with five kids, she has nothing. She's like, they're sleeping in the floor without no food, and they get, you know, one of the child, he gets raped, you know, 8 years old, and then she has nothing to eat or a safety or a shelter. So for those people, we need their attention. For those people, we need, need help, urgent help.
Demonstrator Isra An-Nur urged U.S. President Joe Biden to push for a peaceful settlement of the conflict.
It's a huge humanitarian situation right now. People are dying. There isn't enough medical infrastructure, humanitarian aid pathways. Millions and millions have evacuated, more than they have from Afghanistan, more than they have from Iraq, from Syria, from Yemen. It's an absolutely horrendous situation in Sudan, and I'm here to bring awareness to that and advocate for the voices of the Sudanese who are unable to be here. And hopefully, we really hope to see a political solution in this war. And we hope that all warring parties return to the negotiating table.
Nur acknowledged efforts by the Biden administration through the Jeddah platform to broker ceasefires in Sudan. She also pointed out sanctions the State Department imposed on two leaders of the paramilitary group, the RSF, including the brother of its leader, Abdurrahim Hamdan Dagalo. She thinks Biden should do more.
I think this administration has done a lot to bring awareness and to try to cease the hostilities and bring a long-term ceasefire, but there can always be more done. I think just sanctioning Abdurrahim Dagalo is not going to do enough. I don't think that these sanctions right now are going to really move the needle for them. So we need to see some pretty bold movement from this administration, from Congress.
Khidr Dallouk is a board member of the Sudanese American Physicians Association, one of the groups that organized the rally and has been active in the humanitarian response in Sudan. He highlighted the dire conditions in hospitals and shortages of medical supplies.
80% of hospitals, you know, are shut down. The situation in Darfur is even worse. There are almost 14 million children who need urgent humanitarian crisis, including vaccines. Kids are dying from malnutrition. About 3 or 5 of them are dying every day in Wad Madani Hospital. And the health care system is just crumbling. And if we don't act now, we are not going to be able to save the people.
Saturday's rally was organized by international non-governmental organizations such as Amnesty International USA, Human Rights Watch, Refugees International, Refugee Congress, as well as Sudanese groups such as Sudan Unlimited, Act for Sudan, and Grifna. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington.
Still on Sudan, some Sudanese citizens in the capital Khartoum say the nearly 6 months of fighting has led to shortages of basic food commodities as aid agencies are unable to access areas where fighting is ongoing. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Juba.
Eyewitnesses in the Sudanese capital, Khartoum, say fighting continues between the Sudan Armed Forces and the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces this morning in and around the military headquarters and in Omdurman. Khartoum resident Samia Argawi says for the past 10 days, heavy artillery and airstrike could be heard around the military headquarters as the RSF launched continued attacks on the military base. She says some armed men dressed in RSF's military uniform allegedly looted the food she had stocked for her family in late July. Argawi told VOA that she and her family of 7 have no food.
Our house was subjected to looting and everything was taken, including beds. My office space was also looted, including air conditioning, fan and car. We were stranded in Arkowit for 2 months without water and electricity.
Thousands of civilians are trapped inside Khartoum and its twin cities of Omdurman and Bahri since the start of the conflict in mid-April. Speaking to VOA via a messaging application from Omdurman, Mashair Ahmed says as the fighting continues, living conditions have significantly worsened, affecting all residents. She says many families who are stranded inside battle areas are now going hungry due to shortages of food.
The shop owners are careful nowadays and they only open shops in the morning hours and for a period of 2 or 3 hours, and then they close down. This is due to the continuation of confrontation or they are afraid of looting.
Another Khartoum resident, Munir Hassan, calls on the warring parties to engage in dialogue and silence the guns across Sudan. He says the nearly 6 months of fighting has left thousands of civilians killed or displaced, adding that the fighting also destroyed infrastructure.
Military solution has not been successful for the past period, and since it took them long with no success, let them go to the option of peace talks.
In a statement released today, the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, or UN OCHA, in Sudan, says fighting in Sudan has displaced over 4.1 million people internally across the country. Meanwhile, many others have been cut off from access to basic services in Khartoum, Darfur, and Kordofan states as prices of food commodities, when available, continue to soar. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
From Juba, we move to Kajokeji, where authorities in Central Equatorial State are accusing the Ugandan army of encroaching on South Sudanese territory. The county commissioner of Kajokeji says Uganda has deployed soldiers in a disputed area and has closed the border between the two countries. A Ugandan military spokesperson confirms the deployment but says the Ugandan army is in the area for what he describes as protection purposes. For VOA News, David Mayar reports from Juba.
Fanuel Dumu, the commissioner of Kajokeji County, says the latest border dispute between Uganda and South Sudan started when a South Sudanese county official was arrested in Uganda's Yumbe district a week ago. He says youths from Kajokeji retaliated by arresting 13 Ugandan shackled banners, which raised concern from authorities from the two bordering communities.
So in a good gesture, the handing over was done ceremoniously at Apoji at the side of Uganda. So take the 13 and then allow my chief, the witness of this member of parliament. So in agreement, it says all of us to cool down the situation, and on 22nd, we are supposed to make a declaration in that meeting, issue of land. Who owns this land? Is it the Ugandan or a South Sudanese?
The commissioner says the planned meeting was interrupted when the Ugandan People's Defense Forces, or UPDF, allegedly intervened and established a base within South Sudanese territory and immediately declared that the border between Uganda and South Sudan at that point was closed.
Yes, the question is, why that deployment for? And yet it's not a territory of Uganda, it's our territory. But those are indicators that they are prepared for something, but we are not for the war, we are for the peace. Say the board committee of the tradition in their side and our side will now suspend. Let the military to military find out a solution among themselves, and then it will prepare a ground for us to meet next.
Brigadier General Felix Kulaije is a spokesperson of the Uganda People's Defense Force. He says the Uganda government is aware of the deployment of forces along Moyo-Kajokeji border. Felix disputes any claim of unlawful encroachment by the UPDF into South Sudan.
As we are aware, H.E. Salva Kiir was in Entebbe last week. The matter was discussed. These are countries that enjoy very close brother relations, and there is no reason why we should escalate a problem that could be handled locally, since the people in that region are all brothers, whether in South Sudan or Uganda. Two, there is a border verification commission that was established, and it is working on that matter.
Felix adds the forces were deployed to only provide security to the local community.
But the people must be protected. There are people who are being killed by armed gangs. The people must be protected. If people are vulnerable, we must protect them, much as we are still waiting for the results of the Border Verification Committee. As long as you are in this area and you are a civilian, you deserve protection. For us, we regard everybody as brother and sister.
Major General Lou Raikong, a spokesperson of the South Sudan's People's Defense Forces, says the border issues between Uganda and South Sudan have been recurring in recent years, adding that SSPDF has resolved to stay away and allow the political leaders to spearhead the solution.
Yeah. Because it has become a recurrent problem, that's why the two countries decided to set up a joint border technical committee to advise the political leaders on the best way forward. Whether UPDF was encroached or not, we leave it to the committee to come up with durable solutions on how it will be overcome.
In January 2019, South Sudan and Uganda formed a 26-member joint technical border committee to resolve border tensions between the two neighboring East African countries. The committee was tasked to sensitize the communities along the border about its existence and mandate to demarcate the 435-kilometer border stretching from Democratic Republic of Congo in the west to Kenya in the east. For VOA News, Amanyang David Mayer in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, Kenya is looking at extending presidential term limits. Find out why after the break. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. A Kenyan lawmaker from the ruling United Democratic Alliance, or UDA, has suggested extending the presidential term limits from 5 to 7 years. Muhammad Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
A Kenyan lawmaker from the ruling United Democratic Alliance, or UDA, has suggested extending the presidential term limit from 5 to 7 years, Mohammed Yusuf reports. Speaking to reporters at the parliamentary buildings, Samson Cherargei of the United Democratic Alliance, senator from the Rift Valley region, said the current 5-year mandate is not enough to run a government.
This enables the president to have a good opportunity to form and establish a formidable team to deliver his manifesto. Besides, the Kenya presidential election is always highly profile as a result of it being conducted within a short period of time, thus making it a do-or-die event. The continuous campaign mood in the country has been occasioned by the perception that elections are held within the short period of 5 years. In any election period, we lose our 1 year in campaigns, and another year is lost immediately after election because of the litigations in the Supreme Court.
Kenya usually has very competitive politics during elections, which can lead to deadly protests, ethnic tensions and violence. In case of a presidential election dispute, the matter is taken to the country's Supreme Court, which takes less than a month to decide. The court judgment, if it favours the winner, gives him a week to be sworn in and a few weeks to create a cabinet, which is approved by Parliament. Kenya's political commentator Martin Andati says the plan is intended to divert voters' attention away from the real problems faced by the country.
I think they are creating diversionary tactics because they know that for you to be able to change the term limits, you have to go through a referendum. So I think they could basically be creating something to keep Kenyans busy as a diversionary tactic to get people concerned with that so that they move away from raising the pertinent issues. So there are issues. There are issues of the economy. There are issues of the government over borrowing. All those issues. So to create a diversionary tactic, you come up with something that would now be attractive for people to talk about.
This month, Kenya experienced the highest fuel prices in its history, reaching 211 shillings per litre of petrol. This increase is expected to impact the prices of essential goods. The government blames the price increase on the global rise in oil prices. In a statement, Cleophas Malala, Secretary General of the ruling party, distanced the UDA from the ongoing debate on extending presidential terms. Malala said the president has sworn to respect, uphold and defend the constitution, which outlines the presidential term limit. Any changes to the constitution will require referendum. Cherargei argues that the constitution can be amended through a popular vote.
Let's read in the pointers. Because our constitution envisages amendment of the constitution at any given time, so long as the threshold is met under the provisions of Article 256 and 257 through popular initiative.
The senator has submitted a proposal to the committee tasked with finding a political solution for the hotly contested 2022 elections. He anticipates that government and opposition members will adopt this proposal in future political conversations. Mohammed Yusuf, VOA News, Nairobi.
Nairobi will move to Casablanca, where the Moroccan government says it is budgeting almost $13 billion to help the country recover from the September 8th earthquake that killed nearly 3,000 people. Officials say $11 billion would be used for reconstruction, rehousing and socio-economic development of the affected areas. $11.7 billion will be used towards helping 4.2 million affected people over a period of 5 years. Elizabeth Mayers, an American political analyst living in Marrakesh, spoke with VOA's senior analyst Mohammed Al-Ashanawi about the series of Moroccan efforts taken since the earthquake hit 2 weeks ago.
The first things that happened pretty much were the king cut short a private trip and came back within hours of hearing about the earthquake and immediately ordered the army out to engage in search and rescue efforts. So those have been going on for 12 days now. In addition to just getting the army out to help in the search and rescue, the army set up 3 field hospitals in very isolated areas in the mountains, mainly in the province of Al Hawz, which is the worst hit region. And those have been used very well by the populations. In addition to those initial emergency relief, the things that needed to be done immediately, the king has also ordered financial contributions really much quite across the board. He created a special account number 126 with the Bank Al Maghrib, which is Morocco's central bank. And that is a fund that is in the account of the treasury that people can contribute to, whether they're inside Morocco or outside Morocco. That money is destined to go specifically for earthquake relief. In addition to that, he's also ordered that all civil servants at whatever level will be required to contribute some of their pay into the disaster relief effort. So all lower level civil servants will have a day's pay reduced from their wage over each of the next 3 months. And even at the minister level, there will be contributions much more significant from those high level officials. In addition to that, we've seen the king has ordered the rehousing of displaced people who lost their houses in the quake. And right now, as of the latest numbers I'm aware of, there are 50,000 homes that are known to be damaged in the High Atlas Mountains. But I expect that when all is said and done and all of the assessments are completed, there will be a lot more. But the state will provide the owners of those houses 140,000 dirhams, or about $14,000 each, for a reconstruction of their demolished homes, and about 80,000 dirhams for partly damaged homes to help fix them up.
Did the Moroccan government establish a plan to deal with the orphans who lost their parents in the earthquake?
The king has also focused on vulnerable populations and declared a few days ago that all children who've lost their parents, all orphans who lost their parents in the earthquake, will become wards of the state. And that confers some benefits on them in terms of education and healthcare and support until they finish their studies, and also a priority in getting civil service jobs. But one of the things also we're worried about is trafficking. So he's prohibited the publishing of photographs of children alone in the rubble to try and prevent that.
Most earthquake experts say the aftermath of a huge destruction like what happened in Morocco would need long-term plans extending over several years to rebuild what was destroyed. Is Morocco planning ahead?
Today was the third of 3 working sessions that the Royal Palace has hosted to do with reconstruction and general upgrading for the regions in the earthquake. And there has been announced a quite ambitious program designed to provide a coherent and rapid and proactive approach. It has an overall budget of 120 billion dirhams over a 5-year period, and it will cover the 6 provinces that were majorly affected. That's Marrakesh here, Al Hawz, Taroudant, Chichawa, Azilal, and Ouarzazate. And probably a population of about 4.2 million people is involved in that. So they're focused right now on relocating disaster victims, rebuilding housing, rehabilitating the infrastructure. But the thing is that the geographical reach of the earthquake was really quite extraordinary. It was felt all across the country, including on the coast at Sawira and Imsouane, to the west of the epicenter in Iril, and then also far to the east, even past Ouarzazate, to some of the villages as far as Tinrir. And that's a span of more than 500 kilometers. It was even felt in Rabat, in the capital. So I'm afraid that they're still assessing, obviously. So I'm afraid that they're going to find that there's a lot more impact than they know of now.
That's Elizabeth Mayers, an American political analyst living in Marrakesh. She spoke with VOA's senior analyst Mohamed Al-Ashanawi about a series of Moroccan efforts taken since the earthquake hit 2 weeks ago.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
If you are in Sudan witnessing events taking place there, or if you have family you are talking to there, you can call us on WhatsApp and let us know how things are going there. Dial the international code +1, then 202-258-3076. The number again, the international code +1, then 202-258-3076.
That's all we prepared for you on this Monday, September 25th, 2023. We now take you to South Sudan with Ras Corby and the song Beled Jadid. Listening to Ras Corby and the song Beled Jadid. Don't forget to visit voaafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you missed this program, go to www.voaafrica.com/South Sudan. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Zainab Abdurrahman, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The fighting in Sudan continues to severely impact South Sudan's resources and humanitarian needs due to more than 250,000 returnees and refugees seeking refuge in border towns and internally displaced persons camps, said U.S. Ambassador Robert Wood, U.N. Alternative Representative for Special Political Affairs.
An additional 26,000 South Sudanese displaced persons have fled violence and food insecurity in Ethiopia's refugee camps, further straining resources and food supply.
The United States remains gravely concerned over the congestion and overcrowding in border towns such as Renk and internally displaced persons camps, as well as the lack of adequate shelter and medical aid for displaced persons. Ambassador Wood strongly urged the United Nations mission in South Sudan, the transitional government, and humanitarian partners to strengthen efforts to provide returnees and displaced persons sufficient shelter, food, medical, and relocation services. He also urged parties to continue to provide assistance and services to host communities and those displaced less recently to ensure a balanced approach that takes into account the needs of all groups. The United States remains disappointed with a lack of progress by the transitional government of South Sudan's implementation of the 2018 peace agreement and the 2022 roadmap, said Ambassador Wood.
With only 15 months remaining until the December 2024 elections, it is not evident South Sudan will be prepared to hold elections under conditions consistent with President Kiir's commitments. Open political space for a genuine campaign free of intimidation and violence does not exist. The transitional government has failed to detail the budget revenue it will dedicate to electoral administrative tasks, and needed legislation has not been passed.
Sexual violence remains an ongoing issue that must be addressed, warned Ambassador Wood.
This reporting period highlighted 18 cases of conflict-related sexual violence, including 12 women, 8 girls, and 1 man. The United States strongly condemns any form of gender-based violence. We call on the government to take immediate steps to strengthen rule of law institutions and increase survivors' access to services.
The transitional government must seize this opportunity to give the South Sudanese people a hopeful future, said Ambassador Wood. The people of South Sudan deserve to live without violence, to feel safe, and to contribute to the betterment of their country.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.